This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. Jerry, by the way, is the mouse. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So the Seattle City Council decided in their infinite wisdom that they are going to cancel, kill, gut the navigation team across the city. The navigation team is, of course, the specialized police unit that has social workers embedded with them, which was one of the ideas that actually came from the council. And it would connect with people who are living on the streets, the homeless. It is true that they swept encampments that needed to be swept. But they were also connecting people with shelter and other resources that these folks needed. And as a result of getting rid of them, we are going to see more visible homelessness. It is going to skyrocket. And for those of you who wonder if it could actually get any worse, it can. I know it seems really, really, really bad right now in certain neighborhoods. It's going to get worse. Not only are we going to see more homelessness, it's going to be that much harder to get the homeless off the street.
The problem with homelessness is getting greater and encampments are getting larger. And City Council decided to cut our best resource to do outreach to encampments.
You see, because they were involved in sweeps, you had activists like this dude who got in front of the council to tell them, you gotta get rid of them. It's inhumane.
They're being violently harassed by the navigation team. Destroyed their belongings with disregard.
Oh my gosh, they're just the worst. It's inhumane to do these sweeps. It's humane to keep people living in filth surrounded by used needles and human waste and garbage. That apparently is humane. Leveraging some kind of law enforcement action in the form of a sweep to get people to take help that's offered finally, that's inhumane. Got it. Lisa Herbold is a Seattle City Council member who lied about a year and a half ago when we called her out for trying to gut the navigation team at the time. She said, no, well, huh? I would never. She very clearly would. She did. She voted for it. We have the records. We have the receipts. Now she's out there talking with Cairo 7 TV saying, hey, just because we got rid of the navigation team doesn't mean that homeless outreach is going to stop.
Overriding this veto will not end outreach and engagement to people living unsheltered.
Of course, living unsheltered. She won't, of course, say homeless. This is a councilwoman who's more interested in word policing than actually fixing the problem. And you'll of course recall this is the same council member who, when a homeless RV was outside of her house in West Seattle, she personally contacted the chief of police asking for some special privileges to get it removed. But she says the outreach is still going to be happening. In fact, we're just going to give these organizations doing the outreach even more money.
Putting more funds in contracts with organizations that are currently doing outreach.
Uh-huh. Currently doing outreach. You see, the problem that we're dealing with, the homelessness community right now, that problem has gotten worse every single year for a decade. Using the very same people she wants to give even more money to. The problem has gotten worse because these activists don't know what they're doing. They're well-intentioned. They're well-meaning. Most of them, I'm assuming. They're just not doing a good job. And as a result of not doing a good job, we've got a whole bunch more people out there living on the streets, which is not just simply an eyesore, which is not just simply a shame that these people have to live that way. It's hurting businesses. Here's Russ Myers, sales manager at Ben's Cleaner Sales in Soto.
It's got lawless. There's no accountability. It's non-existent. Before, we used to at least have a liaison. What's the plan? There's no plan in place. There's nothing to give me any hope. There's nothing. They've done zero to make me feel comfortable with their decision-making.
Yeah, because they're not considering you. And really, they're not considering the homeless people, because for them, the only reason why they are not pushing to get homeless people off the street is they have decided to push an ideological agenda specifically about so-called affordable housing. And so the more people living out on the street, the better their argument is to give them more money to funnel into housing projects to build all across Seattle, trying to get the federal government to give up land at Fort Lawton for pennies on the dollar in order for them to put up this program for more affordable housing. They think just putting up affordable housing is going to stop people from being homeless. These are people who don't understand why people are homeless to begin with. You do realize that they were not born homeless. Something happened in their lives that put them on the path to being homeless. For some of them, it was a drug addiction or alcoholism or a mental health issue. For others, it was simply being put in a position through no fault of their own. They lost a job and maybe they didn't have the education they needed or the skills they needed to get another one, and it just spiraled out of control. Unless you address those underlying conditions, simply putting them in a home does not mean they are no longer going to be homeless. If they were homeless because of mental health issues, putting them in a house means you've temporarily put them inside, but the mental health issue is going to, yet again, put them in a position where they leave and end up back on the streets. You need a carrot and stick approach, and that was at least in part what the navigation team was able to do. Now, I would argue it needed to be a lot more aggressive. I would argue that what they should have done, which is tell the navigation team, go ahead and make arrests to the people who are breaking the law. Arrest them until they say yes to the offers. That is a system that has worked really, really, really well in Marysville, in Monroe, in Sultan. Parts of Pierce County do the exact same thing. But they don't want to give power to police because police are bad. ACAB, am I right? We don't want to criminalize poverty, they say. Even though you're not criminalizing poverty, you're criminalizing criminal behavior. You're saying that you actually have to pay a price when you break the law. But again, we prefer not to put you actually in jail. We would rather put you in shelter. But if you're going to say no to shelter, then I'm going to have to throw you in jail. And yes, I understand. It's not like you're going to be charged by the Seattle City Attorney, Pete Holmes. They're going to release you within probably an hour and a half. You'll be right back here. Cool. So will I. And I'm going to keep arresting you and arresting you and arresting you until you say, okay, fine. I give in. I give up. I will take that shelter. I will go into that system. And then once you get them into the system, you can actually take care of them. You can get them the help that they need. You can get on them every step of the way, making sure that they're going to that appointment to see a doctor, to treat whatever it is that they need treated. Or you're guaranteeing that, yes, you know what? I'm going to drive you to that job training program at the library. We are going to help get your life together. And we're going to put you in a program in which we're going to reach out to businesses that are willing to hire folks who used to be living out on the streets. We're going to hook you up with a shower, a shave, a haircut, a place to leave your belongings. We're going to drive you to that job for that shift that starts at 7:30 a.m. We're going to babysit you for as long as we need to, until we don't have to anymore, till you don't want us to, because you're getting your own life in order. And then before you know it, they get that paycheck, and that second paycheck, and that third paycheck, and that fourth paycheck, and bam, they actually start to have some money and some skills. And they've created a sense of belonging and accomplishment in their community. Instead of just leaving them on the streets to do whatever it is they want to do. It's not necessarily a whole tough love pitch, but sometimes, yeah, you got to be a little bit tough. You got to be a little bit persistent. Got to be a little bit mean and unfair in their eyes. But it does eventually work. And there's lots of data to show that. But the city doesn't want to do it because the homeless people are worth more to them politically, leaving them out on the streets. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, a pretty silly smear of a Republican congresswoman from right here in Washington State. Turns out the smear wasn't just vicious, but it was very very hypocritical. We're going to tell you why when we come back. Don't forget, Tuesday night at 6 p.m., we will be broadcasting the live commercial-free debate. First debate between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden. I'm very excited for that. Make sure you download the smartphone app. Get that app on your phone, because we'll be sending out an alert so you know that it's happening and you won't forget. You'll be able to listen to it uninterrupted Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Kudos to the Washington Free Beacon, because they have a really, really good story out right now about Carolyn Long, who is the Washington Democrat on the east southeast side of the state, or Vancouver. And she's running to try to unseat Republican Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler. Carolyn Long is getting very, very desperate. So desperate, she decided to risk being called out as a hypocrite. And I suppose in the world of politics, they don't really care about all that. Carolyn Long has said Butler should not be trusted because she is a puppet of Big Pharma. In fact, she put out this ad not long ago.
Why are prescription drugs so expensive? It's a cycle. Politicians like Jamie Herrera Butler run for Congress. And the prescription drug industry funds her campaign. She votes to give those big drug companies big tax breaks and lets them raise prices, and they rake it in.
I so bet when it's Carolyn campaign season wouldn't do again, that.
There's more money to give out, and we get higher prescription drug costs. We've got to put a stop to this. I'm Carolyn Long, and I approve this message.
You approve that smear. We got it. It turns out Long is the one who might have been hiding her ties to Big Pharma. How ironic is that? So back in May, around the time that this ad came out, back in May, she was supposed to turn over her financial disclosure forms. But she got an extension. Well, she finally submitted her forms back on the 17th of this month. It turns out her husband's retirement plan is funded in large part by Pfizer and Sanofi, two giant pharmaceutical companies. Now, all I'm asking for is consistency. I don't think that a retirement plan that leans heavily, relies heavily on pharmaceutical companies, I don't think that means you are indebted to Big Pharma. But if you're going to make that kind of smear against someone, claiming that someone is financially benefiting from their support of Big Pharma, and that is somehow a character flaw, which, by the way, the smear is incorrect. She's not a puppet of Big Pharma, Jamie Herrera Butler. But if you're going to do that, should you not make sure that you're not making a whole bunch of money directly from Big Pharma? Like, is that, can we at least establish that as a basic rule?
You would think that that makes sense, but
not so much, huh?
Who knows?
It's kind of weird how that works. I love it when people get called out like this. So kudos to you guys over at the Washington Free Beacon. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So it turns out that rioting does not bode well with the American people. And a new poll explains exactly why so many Democrats keep pretending that the Black Lives Matter movement is somehow unconnected to the riots. And when there is a riot, they just say, oh, it's peaceful protest. So the AP just put out a new poll that shows 44% of Americans disapprove of the protests in response to so-called police brutality against Black Americans. Only 39% approve it. Now, back in June, the number approving was 54%. So it went from 54% to 39%. And this is in line with that poll out of Wisconsin. Less and less people even believe that police are targeting Black people since the riots started. That number also keeps going down. Now, the big reason these shifts in the polling are coming is because white Americans are changing their tune. White Americans, only 35% approve of the movement. and all of these protests. And even though you got a whole bunch of middle-aged women sipping their iced lattes all day, lounging in their Lululemon pants, they've got that BLM sign on their front lawn or in their window, turns out she doesn't like the riots in her neighborhood. Of course, we knew this was going to happen. We knew it was going to happen. This is not a shock. That goes into some of the politics behind why the president has been focusing so much on law and order. But here is something also really, really revealing. Latinos, their numbers continue to drop in their support. They're now at just 31% approve compared to 44%. They used to at 44% approve of the protests, down to 31%. When you look at the African-American community, they went from 81% support to 63% support. There are very clear presidential implications here, right? Biden needed the energy of the base who were showing up for these riots, but it's turning on him. That's why both the Biden campaign and others are trying to disconnect the violence from the Black Lives Matter movement, and why they're also saying, oh, it's just a bunch of peaceful protests. Now, of course, we know that that's not true. And we certainly know it's not Trump supporters who are going around and demanding white homeowners leave their homes and pay reparations. We know it's not Trump supporters who are lobbing Molotov cocktails at police stations and police officers. It wasn't a Trump supporter who took a bat to the head of a Seattle police officer. Biden supporters or Democrat adjacent supporters. And in all of this, there is some movement for the president. He's taking advantage of it.
Many of those who are spreading violence in our cities are supporters of an organization called Black Lives Matter, or BLM. It's really hurting the black community. It's hurting the black community. This is an unusual name for an organization whose ideology and tactics are right now destroying many black lives, and whose first phrase was, you remember this, pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon, referring to our police. That's referring to our police. The stated goal of BLM organization people is to achieve the destruction of the nuclear family, abolish the police, abolish prisons, abolish border security, abolish capitalism, and abolish school choice. That's what their stated goals are. This is not the agenda of the black community. This is the agenda of an extreme socialist, or worse, you know what the other word is. Yeah, Marxist, communist.
He's right. And more people, as they figure that out, they are very clearly getting turned off by the messaging and are leaving the movement. That helps Trump. It hurts Joe Biden. When we come back, I am annoyed with a rat. I'll tell you why when we return. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show on this Friday afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in. There is a 5-year-old African giant pouched rat named Magawa. And he just got an award for bravery. And Twitter went nuts about it because there's even a photo with a little medal hanging around his little rat neck. And as soon as I saw this and took a dive into the New York Times piece about it, I got irrationally angry. I got exceptionally annoyed. Humans get awards. Sometimes dogs, because I like dogs. But this is a rat. This is a rodent. These are animals we test shampoo and lipstick on.
You're not supposed to do that.
I don't care, because they're rats. But apparently this rat can detect landmines. And in Cambodia, lots of landmines that this rat has been able to detect. Now, according to the New York Times, Magawa is the first rat to receive this award, a gold medal bestowed by the People's Dispensary for Sick Animals, a British charity that is often called the Animals George Cross, after an honor usually given to civilians that recognizes acts of bravery and heroism. Kind of demeans the human beings who are actually brave. Just a little bit, right? But setting that aside, because that's the obvious take, the rat is not brave. The rat has no clue what a actual mine is. It's just trained to go ahead and find the TNT around it. That's all. It's literally just trained to find the mines. The rat doesn't know that if it does something wrong and maybe steps, gets a little bit too fat first, and then steps on the mine in a certain way, that rat gonna explode. In fact, I would argue the rat, if it knew, would be really, really upset with humans. You know why? You know why we're using a rat to go after the mines?
Because Stuart Little was an incredible movie that showed how genius rodents are?
Nope. Because if it blows up, you know what we say? Oh, it was just a rat.
A brave rat.
No, it was just a stupid rat. Because it got blowed up. The rat doesn't have the same reaction and affinity for humans than dogs. Which is why we sometimes honor dogs. Rats bring us the plague. They literally try to kill us all.
So they owe us one. This is why we're doing this.
No,
it's called getting back at rats.
Magawa's work directly saves and changes the lives of men and women and children who are impacted by these landmines, said Jan McLaughlin, the director general of the charity which bestowed the award in an online ceremony. Every discovery he makes reduces the risk of injury or death for local people.
That's a fact.
No, it's not a fact. The human that trained Magawa should get the award. The human, or humans, that trained the ugly-looking rat, which I suppose is superfluous because all rats are ugly, they should be getting the accolades. They taught a rat to detect TNT. Some human being said, you know what? Let's get that stupid little rat over there because rats are kind of fast and we know that they can go around much faster than a human can and oh, who cares if they blow up? At least it's not us. In fact, my idea, which would have been to just get a whole bunch of rats, fat ones, and just throw them in the general area where we think a mine is and hopefully it explodes. And then we've taken care of the mine because it can't explode twice.
That's so what
just,
you want to do?
Yeah, just take a whole bunch of rats, just like, ugh, just throw them around.
If it was that easy, don't you think they would just like shoot these mines from like a distance?
No, because you can't see them.
So just bomb the area.
No,
blow up a bunch at once.
That's not good. You can't just bomb stuff.
Why not?
Because then you're not taking care of the rat problem. My head, there's a rat problem.
Kill two birds with one stone is what you're trying to do here.
Magawa can search an area the size of a tennis court in 30 minutes. Whereas a person with a metal detector would usually take 4 days to search an area of that size. Do we not have better technology to sort of take this? You mean 4 days for a tennis court? 4 days with a metal detector? Are metal detectors not what they could potentially be? Are they not living up to expectation? Do they really not do what I thought, because sometimes you see the stories, I've never actually seen anyone actually do this, but you've seen movies or TV shows in which an old dude is going to a beach and they find a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, where'd the phase of metal detectors just like go away? Because I feel like as a kid, metal detectors were like common discussions.
Discussions, but did you ever see anyone with a metal detector? I've literally never seen
one. I mean, I had one of those like cheap ones from Walmart that like I would put it next to the fridge and it wouldn't beep, but then I'd go put it next to like a plastic fork and it would start
maybe
beeping.
That's why it takes four days to go over.
Yeah, they're not accurate unless you drop like, you know, a G on a good metal detector, but who's got that sort of stuff?
I'll give an award to the human who creates a better piece of technology that can help us go after the actual mines.
I would love that. Like, that
can
sounds
we just
great.
Upgrade a little bit.
Are we not willing to like spend money in that sort of research? Are we just like, give Steve the metal detector and a rat and let's figure it out?
I imagine that people just don't. There's not a market for it.
How many minefields are still like dangerous out there?
There are thousands of mines that are still buried in Cambodia. And they don't want to risk losing a human being, so they risk losing a rat. And then when the rat doesn't die, I guess we give it an award. By the way, do you think we have a memorial when a rat dies? Do you think that they have any of that? Do you think there's a little wall with all the names of rats that died in service to the cause?
This rat's going to get one. Everything you
it's
just
got
mentioned,
an award.
This rat will have.
It's got this little tiny award. I hope it chokes on it. I'm kidding. Well,
No, you're not.
I'm
you're
not.
Not. You hate rats.
Me. It bothers me because I almost never win anything.
You did just win literally.
I said almost don't win anything. I just got, what is it called? Got Your Back Award from the Seattle Police Foundation. Mark my words. If I show up to this digital ceremony and I find out that they're also giving the award to any kind of service animal, I'm out. I am walking right out. I am logging off the Zoom.
What if it's a really smart service animal?
No.
Like a dolphin?
No.
We just talked about how smart dolphins are.
Nope. I'm out. I don't want to have anything to do with that nonsense.
See, I just really think you got something against rats because we had the cannibal rat
Everyone
story
has
earlier.
Something against rats.
I don't really have any. I don't have a bone to pick with rats. Yeah, they're kind of ugly, but they do their own thing. They're
if
not
a
like
rat scurried around right there. You'd scream like a little girl. You would squeal so hard.
Yeah, but that's the thing is we don't have rats anywhere like this. I mean, I'm not just. It's not like a spider where I'm
if
walking
I saw
through
a rat
my house.
Right now I would assume there's a mine in your studio.
Is that rat's only purpose is finding mines and everywhere a rat is, there's going to be a landmine?
You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. We're going to get serious when we come back. Tomorrow, 2 p.m., the president is going to announce, almost certainly according to the leaks, Amy Coney Barrett as the next Supreme Court nominee. She will be on the bench. We will have a conservative Supreme Court. What exactly does that mean in the short term? John Yoo, law professor over at Cal Berkeley, formerly of the George W. Bush administration. He's going to be stopping by to give us his analysis. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. As Ruth Bader Ginsburg is laid to rest, the president readies an announcement. We're going to learn tomorrow at 2 p.m. our time who he's going to name as the replacement. And whoever the president ends up picking is obviously going to start probably the biggest SCOTUS fight of our lifetimes. Joining me on the line to discuss is John Yoo. He's a law professor over at Cal Berkeley. He's author of the new book, Defender in Chief, and he's a visiting fellow over at the Hoover Institute. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. It's great to be back.
So what's on the line tomorrow with this announcement?
Well, you have, I think, at stake the future direction of the Supreme Court. Conservatives have wanted to get a working majority on the court for since Nixon was president for the last 50 years. But they've always been frustrated at it because after appointing person after person, a lot of them end up turning liberal or moderate. And so the conservatives have never had a working majority of five or six justices. And so this really gives this vacancy, the third Trump appointment, really would give conservatives six justices on the court and really give them that kind of majority they've never had.
Although, you know, to your point, you get some conservative justices on the Supreme Court, and then they start to moderate a little bit. And I think Chief Justice John Roberts is a good example of that. Certainly, he's been a little bit mixed in how he has decided some cases, but obviously when it comes to Obamacare and some other issues, he's disappointed some conservatives. So, assuming we get one of the people on the short list, and it seems like all eyes still remain on Amy Coney Barrett, how concerned are you that they might actually switch or maybe force the hand of someone else who right now is a conservative?
That's a great question, Jason. You're right about Chief Justice Roberts and some who've come before him, like Anthony Kennedy or Sandra Day O'Connor, or people who've just been outright liberal, like David Souter, John Paul Stevens. But I think the Trump administration has changed the approach to picking judges that conservatives used to have. Conservative presidents, including George Bush or Ronald Reagan, they tried to pick people by looking for people who they thought were conservative but had no strong paper records.
Mm-hmm.
And almost like a wink, I call them like wink, wink, nod, nod conservatives. So if you looked at John Roberts' record, you'd have no real reason to know he was conservative or liberal. He never wrote anything, never gave any speeches, never wrote any articles that could point the way to his leanings. That's been turned upside down by President Trump. He's actually appointed the most well-known, young, aggressive, intellectual conservatives he could find. And you see that now in the shortlist he's put together. He's got an incredibly deep bench of men and women he can appoint who are well-known conservatives, who I think conservatives have no doubt are originalists who believe that the Constitution ought to be interpreted based on its original meaning.
So who do you think ultimately is going to be decided? Who do you think would be the right pick if you were in charge?
Well, that's two different questions.
It's President you.
You know, who would it be? Who would it be and who I think it ought to be? Now, I think it'll be Amy Coney Barrett, who is a judge in the appeals court that's over in Chicago. She clerked for Justice Scalia, probably the most well-known conservative justice the last 25 years. She was a professor before that for, I think, about 15 years on the Notre Dame Law School, a great law school. And unlike, say, John Roberts, she gave a number of speeches or a number of articles making clear that she's an originalist, making clear that it's her job to enforce the law and not to bring her personal religion or morals into it. And I think it doesn't hurt for President Trump's reelection chances that she's a suburban mom from the Midwest, and that if the Democrats want to beat up on a woman with seven kids, two of them adopted from Haiti, who's done everything right in her life, juggled being a professor and being a very successful lawyer with a large family, well, I don't think that would be playing right into President Trump's hands, I would expect.
It would, and I don't understand how they're going to avoid just a lot of egg on their face, because you've already seen how she's been attacked because she happens to be Christian, like she's deeply religious. Oh my gosh, you can't have anyone religious on the courts anymore, I guess. But it just seems like that would be such a turnoff, particularly in the South, where, you know, you've got some states that are a little tighter than the president would prefer.
Well, first, I agree. I think it's terrible how religion has been brought into this. I mean, religion is not supposed to be a requirement or not for office. In fact, the Constitution makes that pretty clear. But people are using the fact that she's Catholic and that other nominees on the list are Catholic as some kind of proxy about how someone's going to vote on abortion, on Roe versus Wade. I might just remind people that you've had Catholic justices who voted to uphold Roe versus Wade, and you've had Catholic justices voted to overturn it. You've had Catholic justices vote to overturn the death penalty. You've had Catholic justices vote to support the death penalty. It's insulting, I think, actually, for people to make the claim, I can tell the way you think the Constitution should be interpreted because I know your religion.
Yeah, it is an easier way to have that argument because the nuance on going and looking at past precedents and the ways they've ruled in the past, I mean, that goes over people's head. But you can make a clear argument, as simple-minded and silly as it is. Oh, Catholic, so of course they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. And by the way, if you're just joining us, we're talking with John Yoo. He's a law professor over at Cal Berkeley, visiting fellow over at the Hoover Institution. His book, by the way, is out right now. It's called Defender in Chief. So just on Roe v. Wade, realistically, Does it get overturned if you get Amy Coney Barrett, on the court?
I don't think so. Not right away. I think what I expect would happen is that you will get more of a rebalancing between the right to abortion and reasonable state restrictions.
Yeah.
So you've seen some cases where, for example, some states like Louisiana and Texas pass these laws saying, well, if you're going to practice and do abortions as a doctor, you should have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. That's been struck down by the court. On the other hand, the courts upheld the ban on partial birth abortions, you know, abortions that are particularly gruesome that take place mm-hmm. in the third trimester. That's what I would expect the court would do, would be to be more deferential to states and their rights to regulate medical practice. But I'd be very surprised if the court were to immediately overturn Roe versus Wade. I think that would be something that would take years and years before something like that happened.
And it always seems like courts are reluctant to make those kinds of sweeping changes, a position that I totally understand because they are human beings and they don't want to throw this country into some sort of crisis, and overturning Roe v. Wade, certainly in the immediate future, that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah, well, also I should make clear the conservative view on this is not to decide whether abortion is legal or illegal throughout the country. It's just to return the question back to the political
yeah.
process.
Oh, no, totally.
I mean, if you overturn Roe versus Wade, that just means states, you know, you and I get to vote again on mm-hmm. whether to have abortions and what kinds in our states, or Congress can. Congress could certainly fund abortions if it wants to. So I think a real difference is just who gets to decide. Is it going to be the Supreme Court that's just going to decide abortion cases as it does now all the time, and no policy on abortion can change throughout the country unless the Supreme Court agrees? Or is it going to be returned, like most questions should be returned to the democratic process?
So Obamacare might have a slightly different fate on a different timeline. The thinking seems to be that it would die with Barrett on the court, or any of the choices on the court. Do you concur with that?
I think Obamacare would be dead if the seat went unfilled. Right now, I think Obamacare is an incredible expansion of the powers yeah. of the federal government. You know, essentially trying to nationalize something like 16-18% of the economy. The Supreme Court struck a lot of it down, but they allowed the most important part to survive, the requirement that we all get healthcare insurance policies where we have to pay a penalty. And then because of that, the federal government uses that as the nose under the tent to regulate mm-hmm. all the health insurance policies, which effectively regulates yeah. healthcare practice. That's the piece that's left. I could see first of all, right now, the lower courts have struck that down, too. It's on its way back to the Supreme Court. It's actually going to be argued the week after the election.
Mm-hmm.
I could see Amy Coney Barrett joining the conservatives to say that is not within the powers of Congress yep. and send that back to the states too.
So last question, we only have about a minute left. What's the one issue you think needs to be addressed by this court that maybe isn't top of mind, that the average person isn't thinking about? Because everyone's talking about Obamacare and Roe v. Wade, but what's something else?
That's a great question. I think one issue a lot of people care about, but they're not necessarily going to think about enough with this nominee, is going to be religious liberty and free speech. I think that's particularly in this world of new technology. The way to think about it, I think, is we're all worried about censorship or playing favorites by social media companies, by YouTube, by Google. And we just haven't worked out the rules for free speech on the internet and this new world. And so I think that's really what this court is really going to end up having to decide, and will really affect all of our lives.
Well, you know what? At least I suspect that Amy Coney Barrett actually knows how to use email. And so that makes me feel a lot better than when congressmen and women are trying to figure this out. We've been talking with John Yoo. He's a law professor over at Cal Berkeley. His book is called Defender in Chief. You should buy it right now. It's available. Go on Amazon and buy it, and you'll really upset our socialists on the Seattle City Council. Again, Defender in Chief. John, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks a lot, Jason. Anytime.
Thank you. You've been listening to The Jason Rancher. Don't forget, tomorrow at 2 p.m., we will have the announcement as to who the nominee actually is going to be. I will be on Twitter with my live analysis as it happens, twitter.com/Jason Rancher. We'll see you on Monday. Coming up next, Rancher.